This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Democratic Convention is next week. Although the Democrats are likely to stress unity, there is internal debate about what direction the party should head in. My guest, Jeff Foh, has written a new book critiquing the party's economic direction. It's called The Party's Not Over, A New Vision for the Democrats. Foh is the president of a think tank called the Economic Policy Institute. One of the founding scholars was Robert Reich, President Clinton's Secretary of Labor. Foh says the Democratic Party must radically reinvent itself or risk going out of business. The way he sees it, the problem is this. The Democrats have accepted the Republican version of how the world works.
Politics is largely, I think, storytelling. Politicians compete by telling different stories about how the world works. With economics, I think, being the most important single issue in front of American politics now and for the next decade or so, the question of what story we tell about the economy becomes critical for politics. The traditional Republican story has been that government's the villain, the investor is the hero, and the investor needs to be coaxed and nurtured and bribed with low taxes and low wages in order to invest, and that investment creates jobs, etc. That's an economic story from a political perspective. The traditional Democratic story had working people as the heroes. Their buying power was the thing that fueled the economy, and it was government's role, in part, to keep incomes up by supporting things like minimum wages, safety net of income for people who are out of work, encouraging unions, etc. About 15 to 20 years ago, for different reasons, the Democrats started losing their story. And today, if you are a typical American worker who's got problems on the job, trying to figure out which candidate tells the story that is most directed to you, it's very hard to tell Democrats from Republicans. There are differences, but the differences have faded over the years.
Now, when you say that the Democrats have adopted the Republican version of how the world works, what you mean in part is that Democrats are also criticizing what's become known as big government.
Yeah, it's the story of government that's crucial. That's the crucial difference between the parties. There are other differences as well, but the story of government is at the heart of it. It's quite clear to me that as we try to survive and hopefully prosper in this new global economy, government is essential. It's essential in many ways. For example, fewer and fewer people get health care on the job. Fewer and fewer people get pensions covered on the job. More and more people are living in a world where they don't have a permanent job to look forward to. Under those conditions of economic insecurity, you need a strong public sector in order to buffer the average citizen from this global economy. That means government. We need government big enough to do the job. So that the Democrats, in my view, have to get back to explaining why government's important. If they don't, they're sort of like Pirandello characters trapped in somebody else's narrative. They're characters trapped in a Republican narrative.
Well, obviously the Democrats, or at least a lot of the Democrats, feel that the idea of big government is so unpopular that there's no way of convincing the American public that it's worth paying more taxes to have the government do more. Why do you think that's such an unpopular idea now?
Well, I think for the basic reason is that nobody has been arguing the case for government for the last decade or so. We had a big battle over health care a couple of years ago. And typically, the Republican attack would end up saying, well, you want the government to get involved in health care. What has the government ever done right? And typically, the defender of the president's plan would either shut up and try to change the subject or say, oh, no, we're not talking about government getting involved in health care. That would be bad. Well, of course we were talking about government getting involved in health care. What else were we talking about? Where you have a debate where both sides are essentially taking the same line, that that government can't solve the problem, then I think it's only natural that the average citizen begins to believe, well, if one side believes that and the other side believes that, I guess government can't solve the problem. Now, Democrats can never get to the more extreme anti-government position that Republicans are on. I think that what the Democrats need to do is have more courage in their story, in their traditional story about what makes the economy work, which is not just a complete unregulated free market, but a story of balance, a story of the government needing to be in the picture in order to protect against the excesses of the marketplace. When they lost that story, the Democrats really lost their identity and confused a lot of their supporters.
Jeff Foe is my guest, and he's the author of the new book, The Party's Not Over, A New Vision for the Democrats, and he's also president of the Economic Policy Institute. President Clinton signed the bill agreeing to a balanced budget in how many years?
By the year 2002.
Okay. Now, how important do you think it is to eliminate the debt?
Well, you have to make a distinction here between the deficit and the debt. We're never going to eliminate the debt. We have $4 to $5 trillion in debt, and we've had a debt for 200 years, and we will continue to have it. The issue is, how important is it for the government to agree not to borrow money in order to invest in the future? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. The Democrats, in a sense, are caught in a trap that Ronald Reagan set back in 1981. When Reagan proposed his economic plan, he said to his chief economic advisor, essentially, this is win-win for us. If our plan works and we cut taxes, raise military spending, and still balance the budget by 1984, we'll be heroes. If our plan doesn't work, if what the critics say is true and we have this spiraling deficit following our plan, then we win anyway because the Democrats will not be able to spend money for programs that help their constituency. Well, the second scenario played out, and Reagan was right. Those deficits became the great barrier to Democrats providing the kind of support for their own constituency, which is the bottom two-thirds to three-quarters of the workforce. So they got trapped into this and ended up trying to present themselves as fiscal conservatives. That is, to get to the right, if you will, of the Republicans on this question. Now, nobody likes to be in debt. But the federal government has an obligation to invest in the future because nobody else will, in things like education, training, infrastructure. Our cities are falling apart, and it is reasonable, and governments have done it just the way businesses and private households do it, to borrow money in order to invest in the future. And what this balanced budget drive and this commitment to the balanced budget does is, in effect, stop us from doing that.
If balancing the budget is a priority, who do you think should bear the burden of paying what needs to be paid in order to balance the budget?
Well, the budget is unbalanced right now because of what happened in the 1980s, because of Reaganomics. The interest we are paying on the increase in debt that we incurred during the 1980s represents our full deficit. If we did not have to pay that interest, we would now be in a surplus. So you have to ask yourself, who benefited from those deficits? Who benefited from the borrowing that went on in the 1980s? Well, we know who benefited because we can see by the distribution of income that the top 20%, especially the top 1%, did very, very well, while the bottom 80% as a whole did not increase the value of their assets during that whole era. So the people at the top went to the party. They're the people who enjoyed it, and they ought to pay for it. So there's just no question in my mind that to the extent that we decide that we've got to get rid of this deficit, the way to do it is to tax upper-income people.
My guest is Jeff Foh. He's the president of a think tank called the Economic Policy Institute and author of the new book, The Party's Not Over, A New Vision for the Democrats. Jeff, let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jeff Foh, an economist who's the author of the new book, The Party's Not Over, A New Vision for the Democrats. Now, you say that the Democratic Party must radically reinvent itself or it will go out of business. I've heard that refrain before. In fact, I heard that refrain sung really loudly before Bill Clinton won the presidency in 1992. How much support do you think you have in your opinion that it's time for the Democratic Party to radically reinvent itself?
Oh, I think that history is on the side of a much more progressive, much more liberal Democratic Party. For as far as we can see in the future, the economic condition of the American workforce and the average American voter is going to deteriorate. This is a long-term process. It has very little to do with what's happened under Clinton. It was accelerated under Reagan and Bush, but we have this long-term problem of competing in this global economy. So we're going to have pressures on the family income and the family financial structure for a long time. This is the natural issue for the Democrats. The Republicans cannot very well address it because their constituency, those at the top, are doing very, very well in this economy. So it is the place for Democrats to take their stand. They are the party traditionally of working people, and they are the party of government, activist government, to try to solve and alleviate some of those problems. So the future, if the Democrats can seize the moment, is with the Democratic Party on this most fundamental issue.
Your main argument in your new book is that the Democrats have kind of borrowed the worldview, the narrative line of the Republican Party, the anti-government point of view. Do you think that the welfare bill that will really gut a lot of the welfare program is an example of what you're talking about?
Yes. The problem here, the traditional way Democrats looked at this was it was a problem of getting people out of poverty. Well, if you begin to think that government can't solve the problem, then you redefine that into being a problem of getting people off welfare. Well, turns out that there's not a big problem getting people off welfare. You just cut the rolls. That does not solve the problem of poverty. Now, the president was for a more liberal welfare reform, was for a welfare reform that put more money into training and the creation of jobs. The problem here was that the issue got away from him. And it got away from him because the president and the administration was not willing to spend the time to make the case that you can't solve this without the government taking an even bigger hand in getting people out of poverty. I mean, once you say that the era of big government is over, that is a signal that, well, these are big problems. So, you know, I guess we're just not going to be able to solve them with government. And I think that it's a straight line between the notions that government can't solve these problems, that we've got to save money by balancing the budget, and so we can't afford more spending, and the president, for one reason or another, feeling forced politically to sign this welfare bill. I have no doubt that the president would have preferred another one. But once you start setting up the public dialogue in a certain way, I think it was inevitable that this would happen.
Your new book is a critique of the Democratic Party. What do you think the party's economic priorities ought to be?
I think the Democratic Party ought to come up with a major investment plan for America, for education, for training, and for the to rebuild our cities and infrastructure. We've got problems with water quality in the United States that are popping up all over. We have problems with education. We've got problems with transportation. We still have large pockets of unemployment in America, and I think the Democrats have to get back to that old-fashioned idea of full employment.
Do you think, in your critique of the Democratic Party, that the party has become too much of a suburban party?
Well, the it's not a question of suburban or urban, because the problems of the city are spilling out into the suburbs. 20 years ago or so, after the McGovern defeat, which was a defeat for the liberals, there was a sense that the Democratic constituency was leaving the party. That is, the working class base were now getting mortgages, moving to buying houses, moving to the suburbs, where they were more concerned with taxes than they were with social justice. That was not a bad critique back there in the 1970s. The conclusion of it was the Democrats should be more suburban. And so for the last 20 years, you've had a series of Democratic leaders who have attempted to make the party more appealing to people in the middle class than in at least the old notion of the working class Democrats. Unfortunately for all of us, the upward movement of the traditional Democratic voter, the person who's working for a living, the upward movement of their income as a group began to stagnate in the 1970s and has been dropping since the late 1970s. The average person working for a living, the typical worker in America today is making about 12% less in real terms than that typical worker was in 1979. So what's happened is the Democrats have gotten a theory about going upscale, about having to compete with Republicans for upwardly mobile working Americans, when in fact, certainly over the last 15 years, those Americans have ceased to be upwardly mobile. And it can't be that a politics that was right for the 1970s, after this long decade, this long-term increase in wages and incomes, is right for the 1990s, when we've had income and wage stagnation for 15 years. So lots of those people in the suburbs are struggling, trying to pay the bills, not being able to pay all of them at the end of the month, worried about job insecurity. This has become endemic in America. And the Democrats, what they ought to be doing is paying more attention to that group of people wherever they live. And I think that the president, understands a lot of these issues. If he gets elected, when he gets elected, I think he will be the victor in November. I think you can look towards a second term in which the party is going to take a much more progressive and I think a more populist view of what's going on. At least that's my hope. I think the president has got and it has a history of saying that, well, things are good, but they need to be better. He has said often. Asked where's the left? Where are the progressives in the Democratic Party? He has at times made eloquent statements about the need for government. So I look to the next 4 years as a time when the party will begin to get its act together again in terms of what it can do for its basic constituency, and that is the way that I think the party can become a majority party again, and also reduce the danger of a Buchanan-style politics splitting the working class away from the Democrats.
Jeff Foh is the president of the Economic Policy Institute. His new book is called The Party's Not Over, A New Vision for the Democrats. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.